Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
If you and your team want to cut down on busy work and get more choice and control over accounts payable, you need Bill. Bill Accounts Payable is your secret weapon for saving time on AP. And with a special offer at bill.com/podcast, you'll save money too. With Bill, streamline your entire AP process, including bill creation, approvals, and payments. You can pay with ACH, credit card, check, and international wire transfer. Plus, you can easily integrate with most accounting software. No wonder hundreds of thousands of businesses are already using Bill to manage their AP. Schedule a free demo now to see how Bill can automate your financial operations. And right now, get 15% off when you subscribe to Bill Accounts Payable. There's never been a better time to sign up. This special offer is available for a limited time only at bill.com/podcast. Terms apply. See bill.com/podcast for details.
Welcome to the law firm of Davis and Davis. We're not a real law firm. Go ahead, grab a beer, a glass of wine, sit back and listen.
Even louder, even louder. Welcome to the Davis and Davis Show. That is one hairy chest.
I sent Scott a picture.
Are you sure you're ready?
Yeah.
I mean, so does this mean I get to put on the website once again? Hey, Burke died.
Let's see. That was 8:58 a.m. And that was my third test at the hospital.
Looks like an electrocardiogram.
For my stress test.
Oh, today was okay.
No.
So you had an episode.
Buckle up. We might go over our 15 minutes by a bit.
Buckle up, buttercup.
Monday morning around 2:30, I get up because I have to pee, and I do that. And my back starts bugging me, and I'm like trying to rub it against a corner of a wall. It's like, no, that doesn't do it. Got out the heating pad, lay on that. It's getting worse. All of a sudden, I'm like, why is my chest hurt? Why is my, you know, what the hell is going on? I don't do hospitals. I don't like going to doctors, and I don't do it unless it's absolutely necessary. So when I tapped my wife on the shoulder and said, I think you need to take me to the ER. Her eyes went wide open like, oh, crap. So, 3 o'clock in the morning, just down the street here in the ER. I'm like crying. It's hurting so bad. I don't know what the hell is going on. Although, let me backtrack. Before I left, I took my blood pressure. I got a little blood pressure cuff here at home. It was 190 something over like 114.
Oh, you're dying.
I had to look it up on Google and go, oh, yeah, I could die any moment. Okay, time to go to the hospital. So get in there. I'm thinking heart attack. Okay. Chest x-rays. They draw some blood. Dude, they right arm, try to get the IV in there, and she hit a nerve that went all the way down to my thumb, and I like jerked it out of her hand. I'm like, you're going to try something else, lady. That was worse than the pain I was going through. Chest x-rays, blood work. One guy comes back and goes, there's no enzymes showing that your heart has any damage. I'm like, that sounds good. He's like, yeah, it is good. I'm like, okay.
The heart attack you had is not good.
No, no. If I'd have had a heart attack, there would have been those enzymes saying I had a heart attack. They were not present, so doesn't sound like a heart attack. So I wait for a little while more in the ER, and eventually I'm going to get a CAT scan. Okay. They put me in the CAT scan machine and fill me up with this stuff. My whole body felt hot for a minute. It was really weird. Of course, that hospital was cold as ice anyway, so it was a welcome relief. Get that done. They wheel me back to ER, waiting there. One doctor came in and said something and left, and then I'm getting wheeled away for some other test that I don't even know what the hell it is. And that was the stress test with the nuclear imaging system. They bring in a syringe that has radioactive written on the syringe. I'm like, what's that for? That's for your test. Cool. Didn't know I was having that. Okay, whatever. Sit in the imaging system for 10 minutes. Go get the stress chemical, because they won't put you, if you were in the ER, they won't put you on the treadmill. They only give you the chemical stuff. Okay. 20 minutes later, I'm back in the imaging thing, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I'm not hearing nothing from nobody so far. I don't know what the fuck going on. Laying there outside the imaging place for another 25 minutes before someone comes and gets me and takes me in a different direction, puts me on an elevator. I'm like, that's not the ER. It was right across the hall. I was like, oh, no, we're taking you to your room. Oh, I'm getting a room. Okay. Does my wife know? Is she there? It's like, we think she's there. Okay, great. Sit up in a room for, you know, ever. Well, that was 8 o'clock when I was getting the stress test done. So, yeah, and then after like, I don't know, it seemed like hours, you know, finally a doctor comes in. Oh, no, you know, no, fuck that. I got lunch. Like, it was noon and I got lunch served to me. And Nurse Dave, who's really cool, comes in and goes, hey, we don't know what's going on because there's no orders posted. There's no lab results. There's no nothing. So if you eat this food and they have to do a stent in your heart, you won't be able to get that done till tomorrow. But since we don't know anything going on whatsoever, you do what you want. It's a free world. I'm like, got the, all right, fine. I waited until 2 o'clock before I ate, figuring there's no way they're going to give me a, do a stint on me after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Sure enough, you know, like at 3:30, the doctor comes in and goes, okay, well, your blood pressure is very high and you will have to cut out the vaping and you will have to cut back out your drinking. And you will, I'm like, am I staying overnight? Not if you don't want to. No, I don't want to. Get me the fuck out of here. This is 3 a.m. to 5 p.m. in so that what, damn hospital.
What are you stressed about?
I'm not. It was high blood pressure, I think. I don't know. Nobody told me why it felt like an elephant was sitting on my chest at 2 o'clock in the morning. I don't know. But now I have blood pressure medication and I have cholesterol medication now. And I have to go to my doctor tomorrow. And then I have to go to the cardiologist on next Wednesday, even though he won't be there because he's in Shockton. And yesterday was a waste of a day and I was tired as that tired could be.
Wait, I got home. This was yesterday?
This was Monday morning at 3 a.m. and I got home Monday night at 5:30 p.m.
And you didn't text me?
No.
Your own dude, brother?
I figured I'd save it for tonight.
Damn. Hey, do you remember? Well, I'm glad that you're okay.
I went to work today. I'm like, okay, 24 hours ago, I felt like I was going to die, and now I'm delivering a car. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Well, do you remember last week?
No.
Doing a show?
I know that we did a show. Okay. I don't remember it.
Here. This will be a little reminder.
Okay.
Don't beat yourself up over past mistakes. You are going to fuck up again in the future, quite possibly in the most spectacular fashion. Why worry about yesterday's fuck-ups when you have tomorrow's fuck-ups to look forward to? You are a fuck-up, and fucking up is part of your growth process. Embrace the process.
Namaste.
So, I decided that in our first segment every week, I'm going to do an inspirational.
I thought we were going back to BNN, the Bob News Network, but this is good. This will work.
This really kind of excited me. So I was like, you know what? Let me see. I'm going to find something inspirational every week for us to play for the audience. So this week, those of you that work in an office and use PowerPoint or Excel, here it is.
Fuck PowerPoint. There is no power in those points and no point in those presentations. We have been brainwashed into believing that PowerPoint gives us the power to express ourselves creatively. But the only power it has is to kill our souls. Fuck PowerPoint and fuck your Excel spreadsheet too. Those columns and rows represent the metal bars of the prison cell of your brain. Free yourself from the soul-killing software of Excel and PowerPoint and live a more meaningful existence. Fuck PowerPoint and fuck Excel.
Welcome to Inspirational Words by the Davis and Davis Show.
Bob, let me tell you about TPMS reports.
I'm going to have a new one every week. I signed up on the... I don't remember his name. I'll look it up during the break and I'll say it afterwards because he deserves credit for everything that he does. But I went through his YouTube channel the other day and I'm like, gold mine. Fucking gold mine. We need this gold mine. That's gonna be our we're gonna start every show with inspirational words.
So we have a guest, Jordan, with us today. Say hi.
Well, hello. His name's not Jordan.
No, it's not Jordan.
Jackass.
This jackass.
Jackass.
And you just got married, right?
Yep.
We should call you dumb fuck then. Okay. No. How is married life treating? Are you? Wait.
She lives 1,200 miles away. Married life's treating him great.
Still doing good. Everybody asks me, "It's like, well, how's married life?" I'm like, "Well, it really hasn't changed." I mean, lives in Florida, and I still live here in Texas.
The Zoom calls are mighty interesting between the two of you. Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah.
You like movies about gladiators.
Have you bought the little remote-controlled toys for, you know...
the remote control vibrator stuff?
Yeah, you know, you have it on your phone. Nah. You can, like, you know, yeah.
The love something, whatever, the love... Yeah. I don't know. It's
That's the first anniversary present.
Exactly. That's 1 year. That is 1 year.
Have you had to say,
I will send you to Jesus
to her yet?
Not yet. She hasn't said that to me yet either.
She has screamed.
emotional damage.
Yeah. Are y'all both from like Cleveland?
Well, I'm from Cleveland. Well, Berea, exactly.
I was born in Akron, moved around a lot, and then moved to Canton right behind the Football Hall of Fame about 30 years ago now, 25, 30 years, something like that. 30 plus.
Now, did you hear the story about how we met?
No.
We went to the University of Akron together. Akronites, Action Zoo, whatever you want to call it. We were there. The Zips. We were in theater together. And we had a class together. And I forget what class it was. I think we'd never met. Paul Dahm was the teacher. And he did roll call for like 3 days. And then like the third day he looked and he said, wait, Scott Davis, Scott Davis, are you guys related? We just never met before, looked at each other and went, we're brothers. And ever since then, we've done everything together, including driving in a Triumph over railroad tracks and going, the ground's down there. Including hanging out with people like Kathy, including dating the same girl.
Different times, but yes.
Different times. He got boob, I didn't. Then she became gay. I really was self-conscious about that.
You were the tipping point, apparently.
Thank you.
The reason why I asked is because I found this song on the internet about Cleveland.
Oh, I'm scared.
Going to play it.
Does it end with "We're not Detroit"?
Yes.
I know it. It's great. Play it, dude.
Fun times in Cleveland again.
Still Cleveland.
Come on down to Cleveland town, everyone. Under construction since 1868. See our river that catches on fire. It's so polluted that all our fish have AIDS. We see the sun almost 3 times a year. This guy has at least 2 DUIs. The Platts look like a Scooby-Doo ghost town. Don't slow down in East Cleveland or you'll die. Our economy's based on LeBron James. Buy a house for the price of a VCR. Our main export is crippling depression. We're so retarded that we think this is art. It could be worse, though. At least we're not Detroit. We're not Detroit.
That guy, I worked with a guy, and he went to college with that dude. And I think he did some bits for College Humor, if I'm not mistaken. But it's a great video because the people think this is art. They have that big stamp in the park that says free, I think. Mm-hmm. That's what's in the background when they're doing that. That's
over off of East 9th Street.
Good stuff.
that was good. Hey, by the way, what are you drinking?
Same bourbon from 2 weeks ago with some ginger ale. So
tonight I went to Total Wine.
Ooh, that's a good place.
Total Wine, because I had a $10 gift certificate. And all I bought was Carlsberg. How about you, Jordan?
I am getting to the Buffalo Trace here shortly.
Very nice.
That's my liquor of choice.
Mm-hmm. Sounds fabulous.
Definitely. Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Hey,
huh?
Do you know what that sound means?
Time to get out of Dodge for a couple seconds.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a little break here. Hopefully you enjoyed this Cleveland song a little bit better.
Hello, everybody. Hi, all tonight. This is Alan Free, the old king of the Moondoggers, and it's time again for another of your favorite rock and roll sessions as you enjoy the Moondog Show.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
If you and your team want to cut down on busy work and get more choice and control over accounts payable, you need Bill. Bill Accounts Payable is your secret weapon for saving time on AP. And with a special offer at bill.com/podcast, you'll save money too. With Bill, streamline your entire AP process, including bill creation, approvals, and payments. You can pay with ACH, credit card, check, and international wire transfer. Plus, you can easily integrate with most accounting software. No wonder hundreds of thousands of businesses are already using Bill to manage their AP. Schedule a free demo now to see how Bill can automate your financial operations. And right now, get 15% off when you subscribe to Bill Accounts Payable. There's never been a better time to sign up. This special offer is available for a limited time only at bill.com/podcast. Terms apply. See bill.com/podcast for details.
Miranda Cosgrove. Can't wait to get sued by her.
Is that the iCarly song?
Yeah, somebody sent me naked pictures of Jeanette McCurdy today. So in honor of that, I decided, hey, guess what I found?
The internet porn, apparently.
The fog is getting thicker.
And Leon's getting larger.
I know that that doesn't fit in with our theme for the day. Our theme is here. Let me bring this up. I had everything all prepared.
And then you turn on your computer and...
Here we go.
Through early morning fog I see visions of the things to be, the pains that are withheld for me. I realize and I can see that suicide is painless. It brings on many changes, and I can take or leave it if I please. The game of life is hard to play. I'm gonna lose it anyway, the losing card I'll someday lay. So this is all I have to say.
All right, so I pulled this off of YouTube. I actually had to check a box before I could play it saying that I wasn't suicidal. Yeah. Hey, you remember that show that we did about 3 weeks ago of movies that you could never do again?
This might be in there.
Yeah. Hey, this could be a two-show or a two-part show. Today, we're going to discuss the book written by...
Richard Hooker.
The play written by Tim Kelly. And the movie. And we'll do some comparison. We'll talk about the author's problems with certain things. And how MASH became what MASH was in the TV series. All right. So, yeah. I always let Burke do all the research. No, I don't.
But sometimes, yes, sometimes no. So the book is a 1968 novel written by Richard Hooker, the pen name of former military surgeon Richard Hornberger, with the assistance of writer W.C. Hines. And the name of the book originally was MASH, a novel about three army doctors. I did not put down the synopsis of the book only because the movie actually does pretty true to most of the action from the book. Little tidbits I found out about the book. A lot of the MASH doctors were in their 20s when they were, you know, fixing people up. A lot of them didn't have much advanced surgical training. I guess it was kind of weird because, like, if you were on a MASH unit, which is about 2 to 3 miles from the front, you would have days of nothing going on. And then somebody would do a big push and you would have as many as 1,000 casualties a day going through your specific MASH outfit. According to writer John Baxter, who I don't know who that is, Hornberger was so furious at having sold the film rights for only a few hundred dollars that he never again signed a copy of his own book.
So, wow.
Yeah. There's a theme of that that'll go on even into the movie. We'll talk about that there in a little bit. You got anything else about the book that I didn't hit upon? Or
let's see here. The only other thing that I had for the book, or actually it's more for the author, Richard Hooker, who stated later on when the TV series came out, MASH became something that was totally different than what he originally expected it to be. The movie was much more
closer to his vision, or
in tune with his vision.
Yeah, he hated the play. He hated the TV series.
Yeah. The play, we'll get into discussions about that probably next. But
wasn't the play written by the author himself?
No, it was written by Tim Kelly.
Tim Kelly is a writer slash director, spent most of his time on the East Coast doing stuff in Boston, New York City, different stuff like that. And the play actually came out, let me bring up my notes here.
1973.
1973, which is 3 years after the movie. So the play isn't even an adaptation of the movie. It's kind of him going on his own tangent.
It's very loosely based on the book. I actually did the play in high school. I played Hawkeye at Central Hauer, right behind Akron U. It's very cotton candy, watered down. It has characters of the same name. A couple of the things, actually, in the book, Ho-John gets sent back through the MASH unit after he was conscripted into the army, and they're working on Ho-John in surgery, which they did not show in the movie. So, and I got a little tidbit about the movie section of that too later on. So,
you know, the play version. Okay. I don't have anything else on the book. I've never read it myself.
Neither have I.
So I don't want to do a lot of discussion on something I haven't read. The play, we've all done it, all except for Jordan.
Jackass.
Thank you. Sorry, wrong button. There it is.
And with your wife 1,200 miles away, it's Jack something, but I don't think it's Jackass.
Why does it always sound like the donkey's dying in the end?
Yeah, I mean, if it's tame enough for high schools to do it, you know, it's pretty damn tame. Dude, it's the Uber computer. How can you hate it?
I know.
Still better than the last one.
My RoboForm keeps coming up asking me for my password every time we frickin' do a show. The play, I remember doing the play, I think it was high school.
Yeah.
It may have been with the Showbiz Company. But the play is actually kind of silly. There's actually dancing in it, which was weird. I could see somebody who had seen the television series being interested in it, but the movie's pretty dark and
cynical and racist and misogynistic and a lot of other Seven Dwarfs in there too, but
what was his name, Bobby Troop? All right, let's get into the movie.
Okay.
We've the play, it's not worth seeing, don't worry about it. The book, probably worth reading. We don't know. But the movie, which I watched today again, I've seen it now about 6 times. The movie's interesting, especially if you grew up watching MASH, because it's a totally different, I mean, you still have the same comedy, but it's a little bit drier and darker.
There was actually a quote I read about how Elliot Gould and Sutherland did the opposite of upstaging each other. They tried to downstage each other, go lower, less enthusiasm, trying to be drier and more droll than the other person. And the director had to like put a stop to it because it would have just ground the movie to a halt. But yeah, they undercut so many scenes and it's hilarious.
The movie came out in 1970, directed by Robert Altman, written by Richard Hooker and Ring Lardner Jr. starring Donald Sutherland as Hawkeye Pierce, Elliot Gould as Trapper John McIntyre, Tom Skerritt as Duke Forrest.
Viper.
I will come back to Tom Skerritt's character because I have a lot to say about that. Sally Kellerman plays Miss Margaret Hot Lips Houlihan. Robert Duvall, Major Frank Burns. There's a lot of discussion about Frank Burns. Henry Blake was Roger Bowen. Renee Aubergioni. Is that
Aubergine? I don't know how to pronounce his name. Aubergenois. He was in Deep Space Nine as the shape-shifting alien, and he was also on
Benson.
Benson, yes.
Benson was his big TV role.
Yeah.
Played the, what was he, the
lieutenant commander to the senator, whatever.
To the governor, or
the governor. Thank you. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
David Arkin, Joanne Fluke.
She was hot.
Who, if any of you who remember the 80s, think back to the Fall Guy. Because she actually played the Bond's woman
agent. Oh, okay.
Who was always hiring the Fall Guy to go pick up her skips.
And she did this couple bits of like Love American Style and a bunch of stuff in the 70s too. She was smoking hot. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Even smoking hot in the MASH movie.
Oh yeah.
Gary Berghoff. Gary Berghoff is one of the only people to go from the movie to the TV series.
Yeah, he's got a gimp hand.
Yeah.
Like you'll notice, like he's always holding something or you know, I think it's his left hand, if I recall. But yeah, he's got like a deformity in his one hand and it's always covered like, up somehow.
It was very weird. Fred Williamson.
As Spear Chucker Jones.
Doctor. It's Dr.
Oliver Spear Chucker Jones. It killed me. I never put together Spear Chucker Jones and From Dawn Till Dusk. I never put those two together. I was like, oh my God, it is him. Holy cow.
Yep.
Yep.
Michael Murphy, Mille Marston. Bobby Troop as Sergeant Gorman.
Yes. Goddamn Army.
Fucking goddamn Army.
And Army Jeeps.
Damn Army.
So anybody who's ever seen Emergency would recognize him as the attending doctor at Rampart.
Oh, what was his he was Dr. Early. Dr. Early in Squad 51 Emergency. Last but not least, John Shuck as Painless, Captain Waldowski, the dentist. There'll be a little bit of a discussion about him as well.
Now, I'm surprised you're not bringing up Bud Cort and Danny Goldman.
Do I have them on my list? I don't have them on my list.
Okay. Bud Cort was Private Boone, who was the one that got blamed for killing the patient, and Elliot Gould popped the dude in the nose afterwards.
Oh, that's right.
Bud Cort is Harold from Harold and Maude.
Okay.
And then Danny Goldman, who played Captain Murthart, was the guy at the beginning of Young Frankenstein who keeps talking to Gene Wilder's character going, isn't it true that so-and-so had a piece of vermicelli that came back to life? That's that guy. So he's in there too.
Okay. I'm surprised I did not remember that, but anyways.
Oh, dude, and there were a bunch of football players in there too, which I never realized.
Well, I don't actually have the full cast list, but there was a football game played. And according to my trivia thing, they actually used real football players.
So there's Ben Davidson, who was in Conan the Barbarian as one of the three brothers. I don't know if he was a football player or not, but who else is in there? There's like a bunch of football players in here. Joe Gantos, Everett Cartier. There's actual NFL people in this movie, and it was hilarious when I found that out.
Ben Davidson played for the Oakland Raiders.
There you go.
And also earlier with the Green Bay Packers and Redskins.
There you go. Yeah, Ted Knight was the offstage dialogue voice uncredited.
Oh, really?
Apparently, yeah.
I love Ted Knight.
Fran Tarkenton was one of the players for the 325th EVAC.
Oh, wait, Ted Knight was a Mary Tyler Moore show.
Yep, yep.
That he had a sitcom in the 80s.
Yeah, he was the
Crowded House, not Crowded House.
Yeah, something like that. Well, there was the Ted Knight Show. Too Close for Comfort.
That was it. Yeah. Too Close for Comfort. Where he lives with his two daughters or granddaughters or something like that. It was very, very funny.
Yeah. It's also in Caddyshack.
Oh, yeah. That goes without saying, but, you know.
We don't talk about Caddyshack here. I work at a golf course.
Danny would never do something so illegal.
Yeah, groundhog.
You wore green so you could add for me.
So what was it about the all right, I grew up with the television show and I watched the movie after growing up.
Because same here.
My parents wouldn't let me watch it. And I kind of got confused. Because Tom Skerritt's character, Hunt, is not in the television series at all. Yet.
He plays Duke Forrest. And there is a character.
Duke Forrest.
In the early episodes, there was a Duke that hung out with them, but never became a major player.
Okay. Okay. I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I mean, when I started watching Mesh, the television series came out, what, in 1974?
Could be, but we're not talking about that
tonight. So,
1972.
There you go.
I was four. I didn't watch MASH. I watch reruns. And I don't ever remember Tom Skerritt's character. Now, Tom Skerritt, in the movie, you see his character right after Donald Sutherland's. And it's really kind of the funniest scene I can think. I mean, you sit back and you're like, yeah, I could totally see this happening. Because Donald Sutherland, as a captain, took his bars off because whenever you're in an action area.
Combat area,
you don't want the enemy to know that you're an officer. So you always remove your bars or your crows, whatever you have on there. And so he was doing that, and Thomas Garrett walks up to him and he's like,
"Boy, grab my bags. I'm going to MASH."
He's like, "MASH 4077? Yeah. All right, boy, grab my bags. Let's go."
Yes, sir, Captain, sir.
Absolutely funny scene. What do you call it? The motor pool attendant was all ticked off and tried to get the military police to go after him. Then they get into it. Was just awesome.
Their tires blow out. And it's great because they end the movie with them doing the same thing, driving off in a Jeep.
With them stealing the same Jeep.
The radar's like, "Oh, don't worry. That's the Jeep they stole when they showed up." Oh, okay. Well, problem solved.
I died laughing because Henry Blake, when they show up, they Henry Blake walks over to him and he's like, "Well, I got a message that you guys stole a Jeep." And they talk about it for a little bit, and he's like, "It's not stolen. It's right there." And he was like, "All right. Hey, radar.
Problem solved.
Hey, radar, change the numbers on that Jeep."
And it's great how Blake is always yelling for radar when he's right there. And it's radar. Oh, God.
So, Jordan.
So, Scott.
What were your favorite parts of the movie?
So, when did the movie come out?
1970? 68. 70. Book was 68. Movie came out in 70. Do you remember it from your childhood?
No. I remember the TV series, and that's about it. Seeing it at late night television when I was growing up. But didn't ever think there was a movie, and didn't ever think that it came from a book.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't. I felt like, oh, this is a series created out of the whim. Didn't know that the series was coming from the movie and book, so I didn't know. And I didn't know there was a play.
You're not missing much.
Yeah, the play's not worth discussing. The movie, all right, the differences.
The movie's more darker than the TV series.
By a bit. This was the first motion picture by a major studio to use the F word ever. That was during the football game when Painless says, "I'm going to take off your fucking head." But it was just so offhanded that there were three major movies coming out that year that this studio was doing. Tora, Tora, Tora was one. Oh God, I can't remember the third one. But there were three big war movies, well, two big war movies and this one. And so these guys came in under budget and on time, and none of the studio execs had any time to come look at them and say, "Oh, what's going on here?" Because they had these multi-million-dollar movies going on simultaneously. So they got away with a lot of murder.
Now, let's go into Frank Burns a little bit. Frank Burns is played by Robert Duvall.
Brilliant actor.
Wonderful actor. Days of Thunder was fabulous.
Take your word for it.
Burke's never seen it. No. But he takes Frank Burns to a level that you just never really expected Frank to go to.
He's not the whiny, mealy Frank ferret face from the TV show. He's an officer. He's not a great surgeon, but he's a surgeon. But he's very army. You know, he probably got his degree while he was in the army or whatever. But yeah, he's, you know, he's very, very different from the Frank Burns of the TV show.
He actually gets into a fist fight with
Robert Gould's character.
No, it was the other one. It wasn't Hawkeye. It was
Trapper John, Elliot Gould.
Yeah, Elliot Gould's character.
Well, he gets sucker punched and goes down if they call that a fist fight.
Well, it was a good fist fight. It got Trapper John restricted to the barracks, of which...
And then he got promoted to chief surgeon, so, you know.
I was going to promote you, but now I've got to wait a week. But his character, he played it well. He played that character well. And his relationship with Houlihan.
It, like, evolved. It was kind of weird, you know?
It was. It wasn't like the TV show where it just happened. It actually had to culminate and become something.
Yeah.
Margaret Mary Houlihan was played by Sally Kellerman instead of Loretta Swit.
Sally Kellerman, you might remember from, what movie is that with Roddy Dangerfield? Back to School?
Back to School.
There we go.
What else was she known for? Back to School, A Little Romance, Ready to Wear, and MASH. You know what? I almost wish she would have done the TV series. She was really good at Hot Lips. And the whole fact that she was the one that orchestrated sending the letter to the general. It's really kind of different than the TV series. Like Frank would go and do shit on his own, and Houlihan would be like, Frank, what did you do?
Yeah.
In the movie, she's coming up with some schemes. Like, she did not respect Trapper John or Hawkeye at all in the movie until they were doing surgery on the one guy. And Elliot Gould turns and looks at her and says, You can be an asshole, but you're one hell of a nurse.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that was kind of a poignant moment. And then she became like kind of cool with them. And I was like,
totally. You can't beat them, join them. Yeah. Realized she was, 3 miles from people dying and whatever, let's just make a connection with somebody, even if it's Duke Forrest.
What were your poignant parts of the movie?
When they took Ho-John into the city trying to get him out of military service really sucked, because you're thinking, oh, the doctor, admitting all these kids isn't going to pick up on the fact the kid's on speed, but he did. So in the movie, there was a cut subplot of where Ho-John gets injured and shows up at their MASH unit and dies. There is a scene where a bunch of them are playing cards, and Sutherland looks over his shoulder at this body on a stretcher being taken away by the Jeep. That's Ho-John's character. It just was never in the movie, but it was actually part of the play, and I'm assuming part of the book. They just didn't have time for it in the movie. So,
all right, my favorite part of this movie, and some people are gonna sit back and go, you sick motherfucker, was Painless as Suicide.
Now, that's a great bit. Oh, my God.
Hawkeye basically says, I'm going to help you die. There's this black pill. And
Oh yeah, Black Bill. That's the way I would do it. Yeah, oh yeah, Black Bill. Yeah.
I'm sitting here going, oh. So right after he explains this to Painless that they're gonna have their little get together and the goodbye, and he'll take the pill and die. The scene comes up, and they are all sitting in the same shape and form as the Last Supper.
It's brilliant. How many times has that image been put into other films?
I mean,
yeah, it's great. They do it perfectly.
You have the Last Supper, and then in front of that is a coffin. And they go through the whole thing, and Painless is like, okay, I guess I should go lay down if I'm going to take this. And he goes, he gets into the coffin, he lays down, he takes the pill, and every person comes and walks by and hands him something.
Yeah, and now, they got the two guys singing Suicide is Painless in the background.
With the guitar!
Yeah.
I'm like sitting here going, oh my gosh, this is priceless. Off note here, did you know who wrote Suicide is Painless?
Robert Altman's 14-year-old son.
Do you know how much money he got paid for it?
With the royalties of it being used in the TV series. Well over $1.2 million in royalties, which eclipsed his dad's $700,000-ish for directing the movie.
$75,000.
I'm sorry. I added too many zeros. So dad got 75 G's. His 14-year-old made well over $1 million in 80s money. It's like, you feel bad for the guy writing the book who got a couple hundred. Then you feel bad for the director who only made 75 G's off of a Academy Award winning movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways. But I still think that that whole bit, well, actually, that with the bit with Hawkeye talking his girlfriend into.
Yeah. Joanne Flug to sleep with the guy. To snap up because he can't get it up one time and thinks he's gay. Then they didn't even say gay. I'm a fairy.
So in that Black Pill, I have no clue what they put in there, but there was some sort of a hard on medicine and something to make him
knock him
sleep.
Out for a little bit. Yeah.
But the next scene is like the next day, and Painless is like, hey guys,
eating breakfast. Hey, how you doing? Yeah, never better.
and Flug is getting into a helicopter looking sad as all get out, and she turns and looks at the camera and just smiles as she's taking off. I was like, this whole scene is freaking brilliant.
Yeah.
Hey, make sure that you check back soon for part two of this podcast.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free to play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free to play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard. So swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.